听力课堂，听 class.com。
Step by step, 2000, book 4.
Unit 5, Matching Dreams with Education. 1. Part 1, Warming Up. A. You are going to hear some employment facts and prospects for college graduates in the U.S. Fill in the blanks with what you hear on the tape. Focus on the numbers.
In a study done by the National Association of Colleges and Employers, only 4% of employers surveyed said they reneged on job offers, and only 30% of colleges claimed some of their students were hired then let go. Other companies like PricewaterhouseCoopers are pushing back start dates for new hires. In a study done by the National Association of Colleges and Employers, last fall, companies surveyed plan to hire 25% more college grads this year. In an updated study this spring, those same companies reduced projections to 18%. Still a significant increase.
A 4.5% unemployment rate is still very good news for upcoming college graduates. College students are younger and they're cheaper, and companies love that kind of thing. So the layoffs may not necessarily affect your job prospects if you're an upcoming college graduate.
Depending on your major, liberal arts grads, including English and psychology majors, once snapped up by marketing firms and dot-coms, will now likely have a tougher time finding work. But majors like computer science, nursing, accounting, and finance are still hot, and salaries for those jobs are on the rise.
B. You're going to hear four people talking about the employment situation for college grads at different times. Fill in the chart with keywords.
I remember people graduating last year, and they were getting jobs coming at them, like 6-7 different positions at once, and now it's like people are scrounging for what they can get.
My brother got out of college just a few years ago, and that's when the boom was still going, and he did pretty well. And I just kind of imagined it escalating and getting easier and easier and easier, but no such luck.
Sociology major Karen Aloya graduates from Rutgers this year with a 4-year degree and no job, an unwelcome and growing trend among her classmates nationwide, some of whom are even having their job offers rescinded.
This year is a little bit different for college grads because the economy has changed, and it's changed dramatically during the course of the recruiting season.
Companies in the battered tech sector like Cisco, Intel, and Dell have slowed college recruiting. They've also reneged on job offers made to college grads, offering the suddenly unhired apology bonuses instead.
C. Read the following difficult sentences and listen.
So it's been a little bit of a struggle, you know, just figuring out where I want to be and even what I want to be doing.
Urban areas are just magnets now for young people.
I've been told by so many people that your first job out of college is very often not a job that leads you to your ultimate job.
Part 2.
University life. A. You're going to hear a lecture on university life in the U.S. First, listen to the first part of the lecture. Complete the outline.
Today, I'd like to give you some idea about how life at an American university or college might be different from the way it is in your country. To be sure, the student body on a U.S. campus is a pretty diverse group of people. First of all, you will find students of all ages. Although most students start college at around the age of 18, you will see students in their 30s and 40s, and even occasionally in their 60s and 70s. Students on a U.S. campus come from a wide variety of socioeconomic backgrounds. Many students work at least part-time, and some of them work full-time. Some of the students live in dormitories on campus. Some have their own apartments, usually with other students, and others live at home. Some colleges and universities have a very diverse student population with many racial and ethnic minorities. Some schools have a fairly large foreign student population. So you can see that one meets all kinds of people on a U.S. college or university campus. Now that you have some general idea of differences in the student body population, I'd like to talk a few minutes about what I think an average student is, and then discuss with you what a typical class might be like. Let's begin by talking about an average student entering his or her freshman year. Of course, such a person never really exists, but still, it's convenient to talk about an average student for our purposes. Foreign students are often surprised at how poorly prepared American students are when they enter a university. Actually, at very select schools, the students are usually very well prepared. But at less selective schools, they may not be as well prepared as students in your country are. Schools in the States simply admit a lot more students than is usual in most other countries. Also, most young American university students have not traveled in other countries and are not very well versed in international matters and do not know a lot about people from other countries. Foreign students usually find them friendly, but not very well informed about their countries or cultures. What kind of academic experiences will this so-called average student have? The average undergraduate student takes 5 classes a semester and is in class about 15 hours a week. If he or she takes a class that has a laboratory, this will require 2 or 3 more hours. Many introductory undergraduate classes are given in large lectures of 100 or more students. However, many of these classes will have small discussion groups of 15 to 20 students that meet once a week. In these smaller groups, a teaching assistant will lead a discussion to help clarify points in the lectures. Other kinds of classes, for example, language classes, will be much smaller so that students can practice language. In general, American professors are informal and friendly with their students, and as much as possible, they expect and invite participation in the form of discussion. A large amount of reading and other work is often assigned to be done outside class, and students are expected to take full responsibility for completing these assignments and asking questions in class about those areas they don't understand. As a rule of thumb, students spend 2 to 3 hours preparing for each hour they spend in class. American professors often encourage their students to visit them during office hours, especially if the students are having problems in the class.
B. Now listen to the second part of the lecture. Finish the outline.
Let's move on now to discuss student obligations in a typical American class. These obligations are usually set down in the course syllabus. A syllabus is generally handed out to students on the first or second class meeting. A good syllabus will give the students a course outline that mentions all the topics to be covered in class. It will also contain all the assignments and the dates they should be completed by. An average university course of 1 semester might have 3 examinations or 2 examinations and a paper. The dates of the examinations and what the examinations will cover should be on the syllabus. If a paper is required, the date it is due should also be on the syllabus. The professor may also decide that he or she will be giving quizzes during the semester, either announced or unannounced. For students coming from a system where there is one examination in each subject at the end of the year, all this testing can be a little surprising at first. Oh, by the way, maybe this would be a good place for me to mention the issue of attendance. Another real difference in our system is our attendance policies. Perhaps you come from a system where attendance is optional. Generally speaking, American professors expect regular attendance and may even grade you down if you are absent a lot. All this information should be on your syllabus, along with the professor's office number and office hours. I have only a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to use them to talk about how graduate school is somewhat different from undergraduate school. Of course, it's much more difficult to enter graduate school, and most students are highly qualified and highly motivated. Students in graduate school are expected to do much more independent work than those in undergraduate school, with regularly scheduled exams, etc. Some classes will be conducted as seminars. In a seminar class, there may be no exams, but students are expected to read rather widely on topics and be prepared for thorough discussion of them in class. Another possibility in graduate classes is that in addition to readings done by all students, each student may also be expected to work independently in some area of interest, and later make a presentation that summarizes what he or she has learned. Usually, each student then goes on to write a paper on what he or she has researched to turn in to the professor for a grade. I hope that today's lecture has given you some idea about student life on an American campus, and that you have noticed some differences between our system and yours.
Part 3. Life after graduation. You are going to hear people talking on a new book about what to do upon college graduation. First, complete the chart concerning information on the book. Then, focus on the questions, take notes, and give answers.
College graduations have been taking place across the United States in recent weeks, and many graduates are busy making decisions about everything from how to decorate their new apartment to how to find their dream job. The Princeton Review, a popular source for books about how to get into college, now has a book about what to do when school is finished. It's called Why Won't the Landlord Take Visa?
Country to earn money for college while serving in their communities. AmeriCorps members do real work to address critical problems, from cleaning the environment to helping at-risk children learn to read, to working with police to keep our streets safe, to helping our nation reach record levels of child immunization. At the Service Summit, one of the goals for young Americans announced by the President and General Powell was that every young American should be challenged and given the chance to do citizen service. To support that goal, I announced at the summit that our administration would provide 50,000 new AmeriCorps scholarships over the next 5 years to organizations that offer young people a chance to serve. I'm pleased to say today that 77 organizations have answered that challenge by offering to sponsor 10,000...
Cooperative housing. Now she's written a book called Why Won't the Landlord Take Visa? It's aimed at providing graduates with the kind of information they didn't get in college.
I think college in the United States especially is just somewhat of an extended adolescence. If you finish with it, you're not quite sure how to carry yourself. It's more of time to be quiet, to listen, to find mentors, to sort of start all over again in that way. You're sort of a freshman again in life.
That means handling a new set of realities. How to pay off student loans, find health insurance, and budget money for food, housing, and other necessities. Tara Bray's book is filled with tips on how to live independently and make practical plans for the future while holding on to a spirit of adventure. While many graduates are returning home to live with their parents these days, she believes it's important that they start making their own decisions as quickly as possible. And she says their biggest challenge will probably be finding a place to live.
Urban areas are just just magnets now for young people. There's not the same kind of flight out into the suburbs that there used to be, and that's causing an incredibly difficult and really financially, I think, unstable situation whereby if you're moving to San Francisco or New York, L.A., Chicago, the rents are just so much higher than they used to be even 10 years ago. And for some people, sometimes it eats up all of their salary and they have to get a second job. It's not a good idea.
That means being flexible, says Tara Bray, and considering shared housing or cities that aren't quite as popular with young people. There's much better news for college graduates when it comes to job hunting. According to the National Association of College Employers, 80% of the nation's graduates find work by the end of their first year out of school. And despite the recent economic downturn, hiring of graduates is up more than 18%. Starting salaries have also risen, and the Internet is making the job hunt much easier.
You can use the basic search engines to look for information. You can use the job sites. You can put your resume up. You can do your own website if you're an artist or if you work in digital media. I sort of made the analogy to the old-fashioned bulletin board or, you know, the newspaper, and it's just obviously expanded it a millionfold.
The word teenager came into use in Britain in the 1950s, when the young began to invent and adopt their own fashions, magazines, music and style. This was the birth of what we now know as youth culture. It reached its heyday in the 60s with the advent of swinging London, bands like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones and, of course, the miniskirt. Through the 70s there was flower power, hippies, teeny boppers and punk. The 1980s brought the new romantics, dance music, and we also started to think about the future, ecology and all that. What about the future? Where do they see themselves going? How do they feel about...
For 10 years trying to figure out who you are. I do think that it's important to strike a balance between what you've been told you want to do and figuring out really what you want.
Tara Bray is the author of Why Won't the Landlord Take Visa? The Princeton Review's Crash Course to Life After Graduation.
Part 4. Listen and relax. You are going to hear Terry Gross's interview with Brent Staples, an editorial writer. Listen and enjoy.
I went to college almost out of the bolt, out of the blue. It was my senior year in high school. I hadn't been doing much of anything. I hadn't taken the college boards. I was a middling student. I could write well and love Shakespeare, but I wasn't interested in anything else. And it was the beginning of spring, my senior year, and I was thinking, well, I'll go work in the shipyard in Chester, Pennsylvania. The shipyard, which is now closed,
mm-hmm.
by the way. And I was hanging out at a local place in Chester, Pennsylvania, and the only black professor from the nearby college was in town doing a survey or something, and he came into our hangout. And he talked with us, just local kids, about politics and whatever else we were doing. And he zeroed in on me, and he said, are you going to go to college? And I said, no. And he said, why not? I said, I'm one of nine children. I have to get a job and go to work. And he said, you can be better than that. And I said, well, how can I do this? I haven't taken the college boards. It's April. Graduation is just down the road. What do I do? And remember, this was 1969. This is when colleges had felt that initial mission to integrate the schools. And remember, there were 100 cities burning every year between 1964 and 1969. And people felt really fairly confident in doing radical things. The professor, his name was Eugene Sparrow, to whom this book is dedicated, got a piece of paper out of his pocket and wrote down the admission director's name. And he said, call this man and tell him I told you to call. I called. I had a long, hour-long interview in which I sat on my hands and very nervously, and I was accepted to college. Without having taken college boards, they arranged for me to take them in the fall. I had to take preparatory math courses in the summer. I didn't need English, but preparatory math courses. And I stumbled at first, but very soon I was near the top of my class. So the thing that happened was a man stepped out of nowhere, like the hand of God,
mm-hmm.
and in Chester, Pennsylvania, on a bad street corner, and said, you can be better.
Now, if this man had not interceded in an almost godlike way...
Right.
You probably would have gotten a job at the shipyard
mm-hmm.
and would not have written a book or become an editorial writer. You would not probably have entered the professional class, so to speak.
Exactly. I've been very fortunate. And one of the things I talk about often, what annoys me as a journalist, mm-hmm. when I have my journalist hat on, is that people will ask the question, what's the difference between your brother and you, they'll say. And many of those people who, many people who ask that question have their minds made up. You see, they think it's a matter of constitution, you know, mm-hmm. personal constitution, and they find it difficult when I explain to them that chance and random events played a very big part in my life. And they play a big part in everyone's life.